Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. It's Belinda Ellsworth, your host, and I am so excited about our guest today. I have Sean Lake with me, and he is a former college dropout turned professional snowboarder. Sean has followed his passion to extreme heights, literally, from helping a young Sean White with his homework as the team manager for Burton Snowboards to managing tours for Tony Hawk. Today, Sean is the co-founder of Bubs Naturals, the maker of industry-leading collagen protein powder and MCT oil powder products. It is my great privilege to welcome Sean to our show.
Thank you so much for having me, Belinda. It's a pleasure to be here.
Gosh, I'm just so excited to dive into this. What an exciting career, just looking at working with Sean White and Tony Hawk. I mean, gosh, that must have been an exciting part in time in your life.
That was a lot of fun. I mean, when you're hired, you know, I had a career in snowboarding, which was amazing. I was able to travel the world and, you know, and just be a part of this mountain culture and just a lot of growth in being a part of just testing yourself physically and mentally on a snowboard. And then switching to the industry side and suddenly going into this big marketing engine of products and athletes and helping drive the snowboarding experience and focusing all of that around this prodigy teenager named Sean White. And the running joke is that I was the guy chasing him around to make sure he did his homework.
And I'm sure that that needed to be done because that is part of the whole gig, right?
That's part of when you are 15 years old and you are flying around to the X Games and the Burton US Open, there's still a lot of homework and math problems that need to be answered. So yes, that was a part of the job. Absolutely.
Wow, my daughter does acting and she's 14. And so this year, because she had so many really awesome opportunities and roles, we did homeschooling with her this year, or online schooling, I should say. And she is way behind because I probably didn't watch that as closely. I should have had somebody like yourself running around chasing her because I'm running my business and I thought I could do it, but she is behind. And just because of all the rehearsals and the schedules and the classes and flying to California and flying to New York, but I haven't done a good job with that. So we're playing catch up right now.
Yeah. Well, now you know. So now it's on your radar. So I think the White family knew in advance, and certainly the teachers at the school knew. So they kind of said, hey guys, if you're going to do this, you better have a plan and a solution in place. So that was me for a while.
There you go. Well, that's great. Well, Sean, why don't you just jump in and fill in some of the gaps from your bio and just tell us a little bit more about yourself and introduce yourself to our audience.
Yeah. So, you know, I was born and raised in a small town in Massachusetts, and I kind of discovered at a very early age that I was really drawn to some of the more individual sports, whether it was track or swimming, but really it was skateboarding and ultimately snowboarding. And just the idea of self-expression or the culture that was a part of skateboarding was something I just was really drawn to. It was, you know, just a little bit of its own thing. And it was a little bit counter to kind of the mainstream, I guess, space, if you will. And at a young age, I found myself identifying with that culture. I went to college and very quickly realized that I was not thinking about school. I was thinking about the mountains. And, you know, my mom and dad, they recognized that. And they kind of said, hey, why are we wasting this money on you to half-ass your way through school when you're not ready for it? And I took that and just said, okay, I'm out. I'm going to go right to the mountains. I'm going to go pursue this dream. And I remember my dad famously using the Caddyshack line on me saying, well, you're going to go be a snowboarder, huh? Well, the world needs ditch diggers too. And man, I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back on it, that absolutely lit a fire on me to make sure that I proved him wrong and succeeded at it. And it was a funny thing because I had the time of my life and I moved to the mountains. I started snowboarding. I did it with a very, very close friend of mine who's a little bit of a part of the story, actually a very large part of the story, a guy from my high school named Glenn Doherty. And moved up to the mountains and spent, you know, 3-4 years out there. And I was very lucky. I got endorsed for snowboarding and I had a free ride and all of a sudden I was making a little money. And when you're 22 years old or 23 years old and you're getting a paycheck to ride a snowboard, it's the coolest thing ever.
Sure.
Now, there's not a lot there that you can think is going to translate to what you're going to be doing in your 30s or 40s or later in life, but you're not really living that way. You're thinking very immediately about what's around you, and the farthest planning you're doing is that snowboarding trip to Alaska. But by the time I turned 25, I had realized, like, hey, I probably can't do this forever. And I started enrolling in a curriculum. I was in Salt Lake City. I was riding at Snowbird as my home mountain. And I went back to the University of Utah and I started chipping away at my college degree, which, you know, by the time that degree finalized, I was turning 30 and I really knew that my knees couldn't handle it anymore. There was a younger generation coming in and I had had a fantastic run at it, but it was time to pass the torch to, some young proteges like Sean White. And it was a very kind of special circumstances and timing that allowed me to get recruited by Burton Snowboards exactly when I was graduating college, exactly when I knew I was going to transition out of the mountains. And I moved to San Diego and I took a job because, believe it or not, a lot of the snowboarding industry is in Southern California. And I thought, boy, they want me to move from the mountains to the ocean and be next to a bunch of palm trees. Yeah, sign me up. And so my work career took a very kind of additional unconventional turn because I went from college dropout to snowboarder to back into snowboarding from the industry side with the college degree. And I thought I was going to graduate from college and join the State Department. My plan was to go take the civil service exam and join the State Department. And all of a sudden I found myself flying around the world with a bunch of professional snowboarders. So it was a very interesting transition and I landed in a marketing role in team management. And then from that, I did some work with Tony Hawk. I did some work with ESPN's X Games. It was a much younger property back then. And then I did about 6 years with DC Shoes, which is a part of the Quiksilver family, heading up their sports marketing program. And the thing I noticed about all of these things upon reflection is that they were all entrepreneurial activities. Being a snowboarder means you're essentially self-employed. You are in charge of promoting yourself and you're only as good as what you can accomplish and how well you can document the storytelling around that. So I did that job and did it well for a number of years until it was time to transition. And then in the action sports space, with the exception of working for Burton, I was essentially a 1099 employee who would just walk into companies and perform whatever tasks they needed done. And it was all around skateboarding and surfing and snowboarding and the X Games and really fun stuff and a very fun dynamic group to work with. And that always sparked some great excitement. And then, of course, the role at DC Shoes was to help launch their entire snowboarding program. So snowboards hadn't been done by DC yet. So being a part of that launch was really, really special. And I took that straight through the recession. And you can imagine not a lot of people are spending money on snowboards when we were in that dark chapter of 2008, 2009, 2010.
Right.
So I knew it was time to transition out of that. And essentially the role at DC was very corporate, but it had a very entrepreneurial element to it. I was given a division and charged with launching it and running it as its own business unit. And that was very exciting because you have this great opportunity and you're given just enough rope to hang yourself. So right. Every decision you make, just like in your own business, you have to make kind of knowing that it's succeed or you're out. And that is just like anything else in life. So it was a very, very exciting time to be a part of something very special and build the foundation for that program, which is rocking and rolling today.
Exciting.
Yeah, that was a fun one. I always look back and whenever I see a DC snowboard on the hill, I'm always excited. I kind of smile to myself looking back at those first couple of years getting those boards off the ground from drawing out shapes of snowboards on napkins and faxing them to our factory to where they are today. It's a neat evolution.
Well, that is great. So let's talk about your business today then. Let's get caught up to where you are today and kind of what that business looks like. And then how has that shaped your lifestyle now?
Yeah. So when I got out of working in the action sports industry, I was doing two things I was really passionate about. One of them was coaching fitness. I had discovered the sport of CrossFit and the training style of CrossFit with that same high school friend I'd mentioned earlier, Glenn Doherty. And he was actually my roommate for several years in our late 30s and early 40s. And as we're living together and we're going to these gyms and we're coaching people fitness, this is all on the side, just for fun. But I found a really great sense of joy in watching someone achieve a personal best in fitness. It was a very unlikely source of inspiration for me, but I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Seeing someone, run their first mile or do their first pull-up was incredibly satisfying. And being a part of that was really neat. And Glenn, he had left our ski bumming years and gone on to a career in the Navy as a Navy SEAL. You're sensing a theme here. It's that some of the people I'm around like to overachieve in some of the stuff that they do. And Glenn had, done 10 years in the Navy as a SEAL.
Wow.
He had gotten out and he was doing contractor work. And he was contracting work directly for the CIA. And was doing security work for them. And Glenn was, this is the really horrible part of the story, but it's important to frame it to understand what I'm doing now. In 2012, Glenn was one of the two Navy SEALs and one of the four Americans that was killed in Benghazi, Libya.
Oh my goodness.
So he was my roommate. And I was in charge of all of his legal affairs. We had, created our wills, and I was the executor of his estate and in charge of kind of his stuff. And this tragedy happens, this crazy national incident, which to any of your listeners or to you is, oh, I remember that from the news. And for me, it was, this is my roommate. This is my closest best friend for life. And now all of a sudden there's this massive national, call it lens, if you will, put on this tragedy. How do we manage this? And I very quickly had to jump into action and with Glenn's family, and we decided the best way to preserve Glenn's legacy and take this tragic incident and turn it into something positive, some sort of an accomplishment, would be to help other special operations soldiers transition out of their active duty life, primarily through scholarship. So we started a foundation called the Glenn Doherty Memorial Foundation. Now, I've never been involved in the charitable space beyond writing a check for causes that I would believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I'm on the board of directors of a charity, and we're helping soldiers and families of soldiers transition out of the military and alleviate some of the financial burden to fill the gaps that the GI Bill wouldn't cover. And very unlikely kind of extra set of duties that is now a part of my life. And at that same time, I'm working as a consultant, and I've been doing that now pretty much my entire life. And there's a lot of flexibility and freedom in a career where you're working and succeeding based on your client relationships and delivering on the goals that they need. And so with the foundation, it was, hey, we have to meet up and create a revenue stream and then allocate this money out for scholarships. And that was easy the first 4 years. But the fifth year in 2017, we had effectively capped out our fundraising, but we had more and more people applying for scholarships. And all of a sudden, we found ourselves in a position where we had to say no. And that sucked. That
oh, I
really
bet.
Didn't feel good. When you have to say no to a qualified candidate, a veteran, Navy SEAL or Ranger, you're looking at that like, wait a second, no, like that's not right. So at about the same time, my wife had introduced me to collagen. Now, full disclosure, my wife's a little bit younger than I am. And we have, at the time, we had a very young son. And she sort of looked at me and my old knees and she said, hey, you're not getting any younger. So I want you to start taking collagen. It's really good for your joint health. And it's good for your hair and your skin and your nails. And it's great for gut health. And it sounds like this magic powder that's going to do everything. And I kind of look at her and I say, yes, dear. Whatever right. you say, because we all know that you do those things. And I started taking it and I followed the directions on the back of the jar. And within a 1 month period, I was having this euphoric kind of aging in reverse process. Like I was like, holy crap. I feel like Benjamin Button right now. My joints felt fantastic. My gut health had really come around. And my hair, skin, nails, all that kind of stuff. I didn't really notice that part, but I knew that I could run again and I could really do some of the gym activities that I've been so passionate about from coaching. And it was awesome. And around that same time, while I'm having this euphoric experience, my future business partner comes over and he sees this tub of collagen. Now, at the time, we would just be lifting buddies and we would hang out and talk about work ideas, but that was about it. He sees the tub of collagen and I tell him what I just told you, that I feel like I got 10 years back on my knees. I feel like my joints feel phenomenal. I feel so great exercising. And he just says, well, let's start a company, just like that. And wow. I'm looking at him laughing and we both look at each other and go, well, what does it look like? And the very first thing that we both said, and I will never forget this, we looked at each other and we both said at the exact same time, we have to do something cool for charity. Now, I'm a 45-year-old, not entrepreneur. I'm a hired gun consultant, which is, as we already discussed, entrepreneurial. But I had never been a part of my own company doing my own thing aside from managing an agency. So we look at each other and that just lit a spark. And we immediately, we started laughing and I said, well, I know the foundation. I know the charity. It's got to be the Glenn Doherty Memorial Foundation. And Glenn's call sign in the Navy was Bub.
Okay.
So we're going to call the company Bub's Naturals. And we looked at each other and we said, yeah. It's all right. Now, what does do something cool for charity mean? And we kind of quickly started looking around. We said, okay, well, we know that Tom's Shoes has this amazing one-for-one program and Patagonia has a great commitment to the planet. So there are these two brands that anyone can look at and say, those are charitable-minded, cause-driven organizations. Cool. Let's boil down the math. What do they really do? And it came down to between 1% and 3% of net profits go to charity. And that is considered really, really good. And we said, awesome. Let's do 10. Let's blow that model out of the water. And then wow. we had to stop and say, well, can we do that?
Right.
And we truly didn't know. This is all happening in about a 15-minute conversation. Here's the cause. Here's the name of the company. Here's the product. Here's what we're going to do. And the reason it all made sense was all based on kind of Glenn's character as the North Star, as that kind of vision and mission rolled into one. Glenn was a guy who always stood for self-improvement. So he's a former Navy SEAL who had got his college degree after he got out of the Navy, who was always reading books, was always exercising, was always tuning himself up mentally and physically. So self-improvement was in his DNA. Second to that, Glenn was always helping other people. I think most notably for our nation would be his response to the call for action in Benghazi. Mm-hmm. But on a personal level, as his roommate and his oldest friend, it was every day. It was someone needs help moving a couch. He was there for you. Someone needs a ride to the airport. He would do that. He'd be like, don't worry about Uber. I got you. And that's rare, although let's be honest, Uber wasn't really around as much in 2012, but we'll call it taking a taxi.
Right.
He was always there to help others. So all of a sudden we've got the building blocks of this new company called Bubs. We know the product all stands for self-improvement. So we have a litmus test for anything we produce. It will be based around improving yourself. And as a byproduct, we are going to take out 10% of that and give it to charity. So by de facto, by default, you are helping others. So okay. You kind of got this combination built on, on what Glenn stood for. Help yourself, help others. And it's built into the brand. And we ran it around. I called a bunch of guys that Glenn had served with in the Navy. I called his family and we all talked about it. And everyone collectively said, Sean, Glenn would kick your ass if you don't do this. You have to do it. And so there I was at age 45 going, okay, well, how much money do I have in the savings account? How much of that's allocated for my newborn son's college? And let's wing it. And we decided to roll the dice. And, there's more to it. We looked at the market. We looked at the viability. We felt good that we could differentiate ourselves and launch on our website and on Amazon and say, hey, do people care about a brand that's going to give so much of its bottom line to a cause? Let's find out.
And did they?
Yes. I don't think I'd be here if they didn't. We had a measurable that we were looking at, and we said, hey, if we can give $25,000 to charity in our first year in business, we're going to consider that a success. And in 2018, our first full year in business, we did $47,120 to the Glenn Doherty Memorial Foundation.
That is fantastic. That had to be extremely rewarding on numerous levels. I mean, you kind of, and I love the way that you framed this whole story, because you kind of talked about sort of your passion and then everything that you learned in your past that brought you where you are today. Because I think a lot of people think that they're just going to come up with this idea, but it's really your experiences that you've had along the way that help contribute to your overall success. So you've kind of shared that, but I also love that you've shared how you came up with the business model. And I think a lot of people have a hard time understanding that. How did you come up with that? And they think it needs to be really complicated. And like you said, you pretty much had the whole thing sort of figured out in about 15 minutes. Now, obviously, there were numerous logistics that needed to take place after that. But a lot of times, the framing of an idea is that simple. And I think people make that really complicated a lot and talk themselves out of it before they actually like sort of step out on that branch, or like you said, roll the dice, or just say, okay, do I believe in this? And clearly you both believed in it. And then it had to be extremely rewarding to have a goal and then just blow the heck out of the water with that goal. So I love this whole story, because I'm just pointing out to different people like the different little nuggets that were in there that are really great learning points.
Thank you. Yeah, it's all happened obviously very, very quickly. But when it feels right, and when you are, fired up, motivated, passionate, pick the right word, you will battle through any of the obstacles that are there. I knew absolutely nothing about collagen. I knew nothing about the natural supplement space. What I knew is that I wanted the absolute best in class collagen that I could get. And I had to go out and find that. And I had to test it. And I wasn't going to put Glenn's name on this jar if it wasn't the absolute best of the best. And so how do you do that? Well, you learn, and right. And you're passionate about the learning, right? Like you're excited, mm-hmm. Like anything, with your business, you are fired up when you have a deadline and it's an exciting program or a project that you're going to roll out. Like right now, you're motivated. It's exciting. And you put in those hours because they don't even count. It's just what you want to be doing.
Absolutely. So what do you think a couple of your greatest skill sets are that have really helped you in your success, probably along the way, but even more specifically today?
I think you have to be a really good communicator. My wife might accuse me of over communicating sometimes, but always better to over communicate than under communicate. You want people that are working with you, whether they're sitting next to you or across the table, to understand your position. Whatever you're trying to get across, make sure you're being thorough, because there's a lot of room for misinterpretation. And I think in my career, I've always tried to be articulate in, getting across whatever the goal or objective was. Second to that, it's only as good as your organization. And I'm sure you guys talk about being organized a lot. I dummy-proof my organization to a giant whiteboard on the wall and a giant whiteboard calendar. One of the biggest extravagant expenses that we took on early in the business was to buy this 4-foot by 6-foot tall grease board calendar that we can map out every quarter of the business. And it takes up this giant amount of space on the wall, but we can look at that and use it and really map visually where do we need to be at what key dates. And, you know, obviously we have a lot of programs behind that to facilitate that, but just those visual cues to help you stay on target, stay on, you know, keep your eye on the, you know, your eye on the prize and work towards it.
I love that. We actually have, and I'm going to ask you when we're done, or I'll ask you now, like, where did you get that? Because we made one here, and ours isn't quite that big, and it only covers 3 months at a time. So then we work out 3 months on the wall, and then we erase that, and we start over with the next 3 months. So, and I always have to go in and fill in, like, you know, anyway. So where did you find that? I'd love to know, and I bet our listeners would too.
It's funny. I did it online. I started with a search for magnetic grease boards because I like being able to tech, you know, on the dry erase boards.
Yeah.
And I think the website was called like dryeraseboards.com, you know, /calendar, or it was within the Google search. It was very straightforward. I was taken aback at how much darn money they cost.
Yeah.
This isn't something you can get at Office Depot to the scale that we wanted. This was like, I felt like this was a custom made, you know, giant calendar. And, you know, when you're taking up 6 feet of wall space, you're taking up a good chunk there.
Yep.
So it's a very handy, like I said, visual tool. But you can map out things that are important for us, product launches. It's important for any business. What are these key moments? What are your marketing stories that you're building up? What are your sales channels that you're going after? What's the supply chain look like to get you there? And these aren't, you know, in any kind of detail. It's literally color-coded things. And then you have a back-end program. We are huge fans of Trello. Mm-hmm. And we use programs like that to manage creative, to manage the due dates, you know, and keep everyone sure. On target. And I say everyone, but there's really just three of us that are in it with a lot of substance.
That is great. So thanks. Yeah, I have a big whiteboard for like ideas and projects, and then we have our big whiteboard calendar. That's so funny. They're critical for me of just keeping it front of mind, and so that everybody can see it and be, because we use Asana, which Trello, and you can use Slack, or there's all kinds of different programs you can use, or Basecamp yep. to manage any one of those things, but you can really lose sight of those because they're not, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. And it's like we have a staff meeting and we pull up Asana today and we went through the different task trackers. But if I look up on that wall and everybody in my staff is looking up on that wall, we can see pretty clearly, where are we with that? What is going on with that? Who has touched that? I love that. It's
yeah. And it doesn't matter, right? Like the scale of your business, you could run a house cleaning service. And those duties and tasks are as relevant there as they are to, you know, some giant multinational. It's you have deliverables, they have dates, you have targets you're aiming for, and you need everyone to be able to get those reminders. And hey, we're all smart folks, hopefully, that are doing different tasks. But I'm the biggest dummy when it comes to missing a deadline if I don't have it visually in front of me. So right. you need them.
So tell us about a great accomplishment or something that you're super excited about.
Well, you know, there's always the family side to it. I'm extremely happy and proud of having children, but I'm the dad saying that. So when the dad says that, any mom out there can kind of roll her eyes and say, well, you didn't really do a lot of the hard work there. But they do provide endless joy. But when it comes to, you know, something on the business side, it's too early to really measure it.
Sure.
But taking something that was, you know, I talked about this a little bit earlier, taking something that was really a tragic incident. And that for me was the death of my best friend, but a much bigger thing with what had happened on that national level, and turning it into kind of some positive action and creating, legacy is probably too big of a word, but trying to preserve that piece of history and those ideals and personifying that in a brand and having it actually come out the way it was in my head, and in my business partner TJ's head, is something that we're both really, really proud of. Like we're excited when we put a message out there. We feel like it's on brand. We have this great litmus test, and every time the packaging goes out or we see our product, it brings big smiles to see that out in the market and to see our ability to positively affect people's lives.
I'm going to go down kind of a little rabbit hole here, and it wasn't on our sheet of different questions, but I'm thinking this, and I bet some of our listeners are too. So there had to be, like, this is somebody you roomed with for, you know, off and on for 25 years, best friend, you've done all these different things together, and suddenly they're not there. So there's a huge amount of, there's loss, there's grief. And then through that, you built this business. How did you manage the grief that you were dealing with of this loss at the same time of moving forward so positively with a new business?
You know, God, that's a great question. And you just gave me a bunch of goosebumps. So, and it's been 6.5 years since Benghazi. In the moment when this all happened, I had a job to do. And I think that job to do was really what helped me get through the initial waves of grief. Glenn was best friends to hundreds of people. He had best friends from his time in the Navy, from his time ski bumming, from our time growing up in high school. There were all these little pockets of friends. And I was a part of each of those pockets of friends. And they were all looking to find a way in their own individual way to go through the grieving process. And I became the conduit for that. I became the central focus. Like, Glenn was my roommate. Everyone knew he was my closest friend. I mean, we were brothers. And having a duty and a responsibility to help his family, to help his friends, to help everyone in his massive community go through that process was incredibly helpful because it gave me purpose. Mm-hmm. And I didn't shortchange myself. I didn't shortchange my grieving process. Mine was more delayed. It was after the celebration of life. It was after the politics died down. It was after this sort of initial spotlight was on everything that we were doing is when I was allowed to have my time. And I still have my time. I mean, you don't ever, I think,
right,
and the grieving process. I think it's a lifelong journey. It just has different looks and feels to it. Mm-hmm. Starting the foundation was a huge step in the right direction to celebrate his life and to pay it forward. That was kind of the way we talked about it. And that gave a little bit of purpose, but it really helped us, his family and some friends, and for me personally. The business didn't happen until, you know, 5.5 years later. And at that time, you know, Glenn is still a part of my life every single day, whether it's the friends that we keep, because we had the same closest friends. You can't help but reflect back on his character or some sort of anecdotal story. So it's never left my mind. It never went so far in the rearview mirror that it was this closed chapter. It's always been something where I give cause to celebrate and smile and think of the little Glennisms that are out there and use that as motivation.
Mm-hmm.
So it never left me. So I think when the business opportunity happened, it was crazy, serendipitous. But it just felt so right to take this opportunity, which was, this problem that we were having at the foundation to raise more money, and a product that I was having such a great personal experience with, and blend those two things together.
Yeah, that really is great. I mean, it serendipitous or, it, you know, whatever you want to call it, but it really did, it did present itself at a very good time for you to sort of put that together. But I think that when we're putting ourselves out there and we're trying different things and we just are putting ourselves in different places, things like that do come together. I think it's where people get stuck in not being open to things, that they don't see the things that might be right in front of their face. A lot of people are presented with things that if they had ran with it would have been like, wow, it came at the right time. But you've got to be open to see those things and to take it in, or people just miss them. I think probably people have those serendipitous moments, if that's what we want to call it, all of the time. I just think it's how open to you are to seeing them and in recognizing that they're right in front of your face, or connecting the dots, if you will.
Yeah, I that's actually, it's a fantastic way of putting it. Those opportunities are out there, and some folks will see them, but then your life commitments or the fear of failure or the risk reward balance, they can't make heads or tails of it. And some of those ideas would be amazing success stories, but it takes a lot of work to go along with it. It doesn't just sort of happen. And I think like the inactivity is very, very real. I had probably been a part of a few myself and watched them kind of come and go, and you look at it and go, oh, no, the timing's not right, or this or that. And the next thing you know, you could talk yourself out of one too many opportunities, and it's right. never going to happen. So it's really having an openness, like you said, an open mind to recognizing those opportunities. And then that the self-confidence and the belief that you can really do it, that will carry you a long way. It's no substitute for the hard work, but it will definitely help you.
Yep. So let's talk now about one of your greatest challenges that you've had, and then how you worked through that.
Oh, boy. Well, learning the space, learning the production side of the business. So I come from a classical sports marketing background. I've always had product people to build the product. And I might have some feedback in it, but I had nothing to do with factories or minimums or orders or any of that stuff. And all of a sudden, I had to learn not just about the quality of collagen and the best sourcing of collagen, but then how do you actually take it and put it into a finished consumer package good? Okay, well, you need a label, you need a scoop, you need a jar, you need a lid. Oh, and you need all these health certificates to make sure that you're producing it really well. And then you have to manage finding a co-packer, someone who is certified with good manufacturing practices to want to work with you. Because remember, we're very, very small when we first launched, and get this thing out to market. Well, TJ is a genius, my business partner, at a lot of the e-commerce stuff. So he had the website, the Amazon store, the back end things dialed. We had the storytelling dialed, but the actual physical product fell on my shoulders. And so we went to market with one pallet of collagen, which is about 1,000 jars. And that was it. As we rolled the dice with 1,000 jars, and we had to learn all the stuff to get it to market. Well, our goal was make the money from the 1,000 jars and roll it right into 2,000 jars, and 2,000 to 4,000 and 4,000 to 8,000. Very, very simple, like demand planning on the wall.
Right.
Well, what we didn't recognize is that there's only so much collagen out there, and it's only available in certain windows. And we ran out.
We
had this great, great advertising window, a Facebook ad that we ran. It was a testimonial from a buddy of mine who's in Special Forces. He's an Air Force combat controller. And he just started talking about how much he loved Bubs and how much it saved his elbows and his joints. And we put him on camera on my iPhone, recorded a quick 30-second snippet, threw it out there into Facebook and Instagram ads, and people really responded well to what he said, to the tune of quadrupling our sales in a 1 week period once the ad had really gained traction. And all of a sudden we looked at the numbers, we said, oh crap, we thought we had 3 months of inventory. We've only got 3 weeks. And we failed because we ran out of product. And all that momentum that was built up died. And it took an extra couple of weeks of scrambling to work with our manufacturer and beg and plead them to find some collagen, and then beg and plead our co-packer to find time to move us up on the production schedule and kind of minimize the damage of running out of inventory. So rule number one in our business is now don't run out of inventory. And we got lucky. We were back in weeks ahead of what we should have been. And I attribute a lot of that to luck, but also back to the communication part. We recognized that we had made a mistake. We were very upfront about that mistake. We were less demanding than we were pleading, probably. And we showed a little humility there that helped people, I think, recognize that and want to work with us. So that helped out a lot.
Oh, that's great. So what advice, and I just said that was great. I mean, like, you shared so much in that, and I really do think that is the biggest thing is, like, if you don't know or understand manufacturing, it's trying to figure all of that out. And it's not an easy thing to do. It certainly is not. But then I think that the, you know, I always tell people the golden rule, like, anytime a company comes to me and says, okay, you know, what do we need? This. I go, it has just got to start with, you've got to offer a quality product and deliver it in a timely fashion. And like, when you run out, then people are there in today's world of instant gratification, and Amazon is sending out, and, you know, in less than 24 hours, and people are having it at their door. They're not real patient with that, right? So there is some planning with that, and forecasting is really difficult because you had no idea how well it was actually going to do.
No. And you're right. In today's market, and there is instant gratification, and people have very little tolerance for a brand that doesn't show up on their doorstep right when they want it. And, you know, we're committing on the quality. Every time someone opens a jar, we're going to exceed their expectations. That's our commitment. But we got to get it there in the first place.
Right.
And that was a huge lesson to learn.
Yep. I imagine. Can only imagine the pain in situations that went around that. So what advice would you give to those wanting to be entrepreneurs?
Wow. So open-ended, and I'm sure I'm going to answer this in a semi-cliche manner, but as you can tell from this conversation, and I can tell from talking with you, what you do, you have an incredible amount of passion for. And in what I do, there's an incredible amount of passion. I love, absolutely love getting out of bed in the morning and getting going and diving into what I do with Bubs. And that kind of spark is really a great starting point. You need that spark, that passion for what you do. And I think it's out there for everyone. Not everyone works in an industry that they like. And certainly there are jobs inside of Bubs that I cannot stand doing. But I do them with that motivation of doing the other jobs that I do like. Like, I hate logging into QuickBooks and balancing the books. But that is my job. So I will do that. But I love the marketing messages and kind of seeing that word get out there and seeing that interaction on the customer and the consumer journey. So it makes the other parts great. So if I have advice to someone, it's start with your passion. Start with a genuine things that put a smile on your face.
Because those everything do carry else, you. Those carry you through you're going to have tough times. You're going to have roadblocks. You're going to have speed bumps. I mean, every single person never goes through an experience like this or launching something or anything without a bunch of hiccups. I mean, and some are bigger than others, right? But you're going to have them. But it's having that passion or purpose and being real intentional and knowing kind of what the end result is. I think that helps people get through the really tough times, not to give up.
Yeah. And there's a part B to that that you just touched on, and that's doing the actual hard work, doing the work. It's no different than the job that anyone has today. There are real jobs that have to get done and you have to do them or you're not going to have a job. And when you can combine the need to perform a task with the passion for what you're doing, you are going to find a way to slog through any obstacle that comes your way. You are going to find that energy, and that's an excitement in itself.
That is great.
So those are things that you need, the two things combined. I make an assumption that there's a great work ethic in everyone, absolutely everyone. You just have to find the right passion to combine it with, and you're going to succeed.
That's great advice. So what are some new and exciting things you're working on? And then how can our listeners find you?
Oh, well, for us, we thought it was enough just to have a collagen protein, a great quality one. We went out and secured our NSF for Sport certification, which we just received, which is really exciting, which is now going to open us up to working with a lot of the health natural food stores because they like that third-party validation and accreditation. That has also opened us up to working with the New York Mets, the New York Yankees, the Cincinnati Reds, to name just a few of the baseball teams we're now working with, which is really exciting. The next thing we're doing, which we're very passionate about, is a hair, skin, and nails specific women's formula. I say women's, but it's really more that is geared towards cosmetic beauty. So we've been working really closely with our co-packer and with a great doctor, Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, on the best effects of activating collagen in the body. And really simply, you add vitamin C, a powerful antioxidant like maki berry, and biotin, and you combine them all. And we are launching that formula that is definitely geared towards a female market in about 60 days. So we're very excited about that.
Wow, that is exciting. So. Great. So, Sean, where can our listeners find you? Do you want to give them your either Facebook, website, whatever you want to do?
All that good stuff. Sure. So the easiest way people find us is our website, bubsnaturals.com. We're easily found on Amazon. We actually are part of the Amazon Launchpad program. So they gave us this fantastic website and ability to tell our story within their platform. And our social handles are at Bubs Naturals for pretty much everything, although we're primarily the Instagram and a sprinkle of Facebook type of company.
All right. Well, I can't even tell you what a pleasure that this has been. It's been a really wonderful conversation, and I'm sure that our listeners gleaned a ton of wonderful gold nuggets out of this. I hope they'll go back and listen to it again, because it really was laced with a lot of great information. And I thank you for sharing such an inspiring story with us and all of our listeners.
Belinda, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.